everyone, welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we'll feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. I am Oluwanifemi Kolawole, Senior Editor, TechPoint Africa. Joining me today is Ashley Emmanuel, the co-founder and COO of Semicolon Africa, a startup committed to building tech-focused talent and businesses across the world. Stick with us to find out how design thinking can be effectively applied at work for culture management and employee engagement, among other elements needed for business growth. Let's get into it. Hi, Ashley. Thank you for joining me on this conversation. And I'm really looking forward to what I and our listeners are going to learn from this chat, because what we're talking about is something that would ordinarily not come up in the workplace, but interestingly, is a concept in the workplace, and that is design thinking. Just for context, there was a time I found out that Ashley said she's passionate about design thinking. And in my head, maybe it is something that I've seen somewhere that registered in my brain. I'm like, design thinking, does it apply to workplace conversations? Because all this podcast is about workplace conversation. And I went online and I did a quick search and I saw design thinking in the workplace. I'm like, oh, let me see if Ashley can speak to this. And luckily for us, she can. So let's just get into the conversation. Ashley, this question, we need to address it before we go to other things. How did design thinking make it into the workplace? How?
Oh. Yeah, good question. I mean, I think that, obviously design, different kinds of design principles have existed in at least some professions over time, over centuries, architecture, industrial design, etc. And so some of those principles have been around. I think that is probably, in the 20th century, maybe the second half of the 20th century, then some people started thinking about combining design approaches in new ways to create various types of solutions that, are just really well designed for the users and for people at the center of a problem. So I think that field kind of evolved, and there were some actors like a firm called IDEO, which is based in Silicon Valley area, coincidentally where I grew up, although I didn't know about them when I was growing up. But a firm called IDEO that worked with Apple and others for over the course of decades to help design various types of solutions that I think have led in then conceptualizing this idea of design thinking. Which design thinking is an approach to coming up with innovative solutions that start with what's desirable for people, for the end user, but are also then feasible and kind of economically viable to produce.
So bringing it to the workplace now is like bringing a concept that helps the company to think about what they are offering to people, to customers, and making sure it fits into what they are asking for.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's also referred to as human-centered design, right? So this is just that title just kind of emphasizes the fact that you're starting with the people in the center of the problem and what the people actually want. And it sounds kind of obvious sometimes when you say it, that if you're designing a solution or a product, that you should start with what the user wants. But you would be surprised how often companies, teams, startups, they build something that they think is great, they're kind of coming up with in their office, in the lab, or maybe it's something that they love, a small handful of people, they put a lot of effort, a lot of money into deploying it, then they launch and they realize that nobody really wants it, or they don't want it enough to pay for it or pay the price that it costs to produce it. So that kind of human-centric concept is exactly right.
Yeah, so human-centric. Now, it's beginning to form in my head because when I took a short stint to learn product design and design thinking came up, this was kind of explanation I was given, and it's mostly just the company providing exactly what the customers would want to use. Now, bringing it to the workplace, the workplace is made up of humans, apparently. It's humans that will be the employees that will take care of all the departments that will provide those services. So bringing it to the workplace, how is design thinking capable of influencing maybe employee engagement, for instance?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. So because sometimes when people think of design thinking, they think their mind can go first to creating a product that the company is going to sell, right? So the design, think about design, maybe you think about like an iPhone or AirPods, you know, Apple is sort of known for design as a company. You think about the design. So those are products, right, that are designed. Or you might think about the design of an app or a solution. But I think your question is great because it highlights that all types of solutions can be designed. We can use design thinking to tackle a wide range of problems. And one of those problems, you could have a team, like an internal team of a company that's looking at a challenge and asking themselves, how might we improve employee engagement or improve employee experience within our company? And I think that would actually be a great application of design thinking. Because just like we were saying about products, you know, sometimes people design products in isolation. You know, sometimes business managers, HR professionals, chief people officers, they might design policies or, you know, just kind of use old policies because that's how it's always been done. But they've not really taken an employee-centric approach to designing the solution, right? So if you were to then use design thinking to answer one of those questions, let's say, how might we improve employee experience at our company? Then the first thing that they would do is actually really deeply understand and observe and empathize. So they would really immerse themselves. First of all, they'd have to be willing to be open-minded, to rethink some things that they thought they knew before, which can be a challenge, especially if you've been a professional in a space for a while. But then they would go in with an open mind and try to really understand, observe, empathize with their staff. And so that might involve things like talking to them, right? Interviews, very open-ended interviews, focus group discussions. It might involve things like shadowing them, right? So just watching an employee maybe on their first day, their first week, or maybe of shadowing as they're trying to do certain tasks like enrolling in the HMO or, you know, filling out their monthly status report or doing performance reviews. It could involve a lot of other techniques as well. So there are really creative ways that you can engage with those people at the center of a challenge to just even pull out things that they may not even think to tell you. So for example, there's one method I really like called like the love letter or the breakup letter. So they could ask their employees, okay, send a love letter to something, you know, some process or tool or, you know, part of your experience that you really love. And who knows, the employees, they might write a love letter to their desk, their workstation. They might write a love letter to the HMO. They might write a love letter to the break room. I don't know, right? And then conversely, they can write a breakup letter. What's something that you want to break up with? And they could break up with any of those same things, right? Their desk, their HMO, their chair. And those, just having them do that exercise, even though it sounds a bit silly, it can help the team really understand how people feel about things that they may just have never thought of before, right? And if they learn that as they go through all of these processes, observing, engaging, talking, doing some exercises, And then they sort of synthesize that information. Hopefully they'll see some patterns, some new insights that can help spark some inspiration for how they can really, changes they could make for their employees to have a better experience.
Yeah, thank you, Ashley, for taking time to explain that. But most of the things you mentioned seems like the ideal, like what people should know. But from the angle of design thinking, is it like a new concept that is just getting popular in the workplace, or people have always engaged design thinking in this form that you just explained it?
Yeah, so I think design thinking, so it's sort of a combination, it's a way of thinking and working, as well as a combination of methods and tools, right? So as we mentioned, one of the kind of core components of a design thinking approach is that you really start with the people in the center of the challenge. And before the team even comes up with solutions, they start with really deep understanding and empathy, right, of those people. And there are some, and I gave a few examples, but there are some specific methods and tools you can use to do that. Design thinkers will then, after they've done, gotten really that good understanding and empathy and sort of synthesize that, then they will start to actually ideate. So come up with solutions and then prototype and test and usually go through what we call iteration. So like a lot of rounds, you know, you come up with the prototype, then you realize it's terrible, or you realize it's okay, but there's some things that need to be changed. You take feedback, you keep going, right? So that's basically what design thinking is. And a lot of components of that are things that people have just done organically, right? It's kind of draws from different processes and fields. So for example, you know, building some kind of prototype or piloting things has been done, you know, many times in many ways over time, right? So a lot of those components aren't new. I think just maybe combining them together, that kind of collective in terms of approach and methods and also a little bit mindsets is what we would call design thinking. I think the value in putting that collective together, number one, or what I've seen, right? Number one, I think it can help equip people, employees, teams, innovators with a new set of, kind of empowers them, right? Gives them a new set of skills, a new set of tools. For example, when you talk to teams about innovating, and you'll see from founders of startups to maybe a product team or, you know, like an HR team, right, who's given a mandate, right, to come up with, to improve employee engagement, a lot of times teams will start with brainstorming, right? So the first thing that they do is they say, okay, we have to do this thing. They get into a meeting room the next day. They spend 2 hours brainstorming. They come up with solutions. They may pilot and test them a little bit, and then they deploy. But what have they skipped? They've skipped the entire first stages of taking a step back, saying, okay, what is even the problem that we're trying to address? How do we even want to frame this problem? And then that deeper understanding of the people in the center of the challenge, as well as other aspects of the problem itself. You know, some challenges you might really need to do some deeper analysis, right? Problem tree analysis, kind of looking at reframing the problem, asking why several times to get down to the root causes and so forth. So if a team has been exposed to design thinking, and if they have kind of adopted design thinking as a standard approach, then they're more likely to step back and do those things first, really deeply understand the people, understand the challenge before they sit down and brainstorm, which means that they're likely to come up with better solutions at the end of the day. And also probably sometimes be more efficient and effective, because sometimes what happens is you have the meeting, you brainstorm quickly, you get a solution out. Like taking the employee engagement example, an HR team comes up with an action plan. They say, we're going to deploy it that same quarter. They change policies. They change this. And then the next quarter, they take a survey and they realize nothing's changed. Like people kind of like one policy change, but all of their level of employee engagement is pretty much the same, right? And now they're going to have to go back to the drawing board to say, oh, why didn't that work? So if you take a design thinking approach from the start, even though it seems like it takes a little bit longer to do some of that research and observation and so forth, it tends to be more efficient as well.
Yes, efficiency is what one of the things that design thinking helps with here. You've mentioned a lot of things in passing, which I believe I was able to get because I have like a design knowledge or background. And those are the elements of design thinking. You mentioned observation, you mentioned empathizing, you mentioned ideating. I think you should just bring them together. Is all scattered around what you see. So in a few bullet points, you just bring out the ideal or primary elements of design thinking if you want to apply it in the workplace.
Okay, sure. So I would say, and let me, I'll explain the process, right? First of all, design thinking is really a team sport. So I would recommend, when possible, really working with a team. So one of the first things that, and it's really built around solving a problem or doing some kind of innovation, mm-hmm. right?
Okay, so what if I, let me give you an idea of a problem we can solve now with the element of design thinking. Okay, so it's like how many weeks now to Q4, and there's a team manager or a team lead that has looked at his team and looked at his KPI and see that these things are not matching up, and it's almost Q4 and he has to deliver. So that's the problem. He's trying to get his team members to meet up with the KPIs they're supposed to meet up with, but they are not meeting up with it. So how can we use the element of design thinking to solve that problem as a team manager?
Okay, great. And it's an interesting example because it's quite common, right? So it's a good example. And depending, I would also encourage that manager, depending on the circumstances, that the KPI itself might need to be revisited. But let's assume that the KPI is good. It's very aligned with the company's vision and objectives and so forth, right? For these purposes. Let's say that you've got this one KPI. So then the manager would think about, so the framing of that challenge could be, how might we basically meet this KPI, right? Meet this target. So that could be the framing of the challenge. And that's the central question that the team is going to work toward. Now, the manager would then think about who should be part of the design team working on this challenge. And it's not necessarily going to be everybody on her team. So let's say she has 5 direct reports. She could choose to have those 5 direct reports plus her be the team that are working on this challenge. But she could decide, okay, maybe there's some personnel angles or some people management or something that I want to really consider. And maybe she asks somebody from HR to participate, right? Maybe there's some sales and marketing angles or something, and she wants to pull in somebody from a sale who has that expertise. So she could pull in, basically, she should think broadly in terms of who she wants to participate in that team. And in any team, an effective team, you want a diversity of kind of expertise, diversity of perspective, people bringing different things to the table, right? You don't want a team of people that all think the same way and have the exact same experience, or else you just don't get the value. So anyway, she would put that team together and she would say, okay, here's our challenge. Our challenge is, how might we meet KPI 1 in Q4, right? And then the team will start digging in, right? And so let's imagine, the first thing that they're going to do is, and let me just say quickly in terms of process, different institutions or organizations or books will break down the design thinking process slightly differently, but the same concepts are there. It's just how they group it. And I like using a 6-step process. that you'll find used by some universities and books. I find it useful for teaching, basically. And so the first step in those six steps is understand. And so the team, now that this manager is put together, they've got a clear design challenge. How might we meet KPI one, right? They have clarity on who's part of it. They probably have clarity on like a rough timeline for this design challenge. Then they say, okay, we're going to go and really deeply understand this challenge, right? This KPI. So they might know it pretty well because that's the work they're already organizing around themselves around. But they also have to think about what are the blind spots? What are the things we don't know? Maybe what we don't know is really kind of what's happening in the industry in the past year or two, right? Maybe we need to go and do some research. Maybe we need to interview some experts. Maybe we need to talk to, the CEO or the board to understand, really reconfirm how this KPI fits into the company strategy. Maybe we need to go learn a little bit more about emerging technology and how that could help us. I don't know, right? So they'll go and do that research. That understanding phase can involve both the team absorbing new information, so research, interviews, etc. It can also involve them just sitting down together and thinking through what they already know in new ways. So one example of a method I like here is called a trends matrix. So sort of breaking down components of the problem and then saying, the team just writes down what happened in the past, what's happening today, what are emerging trends. So that helps them just frame the problem a little bit differently in their minds, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first phase, understand. Then the second phase is observe. And here's where they really engage with the people at the center of this challenge. Now, depending on the KPI, right? If it's related to like a sales target, then you're probably going to be looking at your customers, the stakeholders you're selling to. You might do some stakeholder mapping to make sure they've really thought through even their stakeholder groups. Some of the key people, let's say it's a sales target, some of your key people are going to also be your salespeople, right? It might be your other employees who should really be advocating for your product. Are they? Are they not? Why not, right? It may be the delivery, like the quality, right? The people who are actually creating the product, delivering the service, understanding what's going on with them and how does that relate to the quality of what you're selling, etc., right? So you'll go deep into that observation, that second phase. And in observation, you can do things like interviews, focus groups. Like I said, some of those other methods, love letter, breakup letter, right? Different ways of, you're not trying to just get people to tell you the answer or what the solution should be. Because a lot of times they don't know, right? Users, even a customer, they don't always know. They can't articulate the thing that they're going to want in the future, right? The team is really trying to do here is really deeply understand the perspective, the emotions, the thinking, what's beneath the surface with all of those stakeholders. So that's that second phase, observe. The third phase is defining their point of view. And that's really just synthesis. So they've gone out into the world, they've really tried to learn as much as possible, right? About in the understand and observe phase, learning about the challenge, learning about their stakeholders. Now they need to start to come together and say, okay, we just talked to 50 people. What are the key patterns, the key insights that have emerged? And that's where they start to set kind of a direction. So those first three phases, they're almost really defining, part of what they're doing is actually defining the challenge or the problem. They may say, okay, mm-hmm. actually, we started with the challenge of how might we meet KPI one in Q4. Now what we're realizing is we're actually seeing a big challenge around, let's say like quality of services. Let's imagine it's a services business, right? So actually what we're gonna do is change our question and we're going to say, how might we improve the quality of our services to customers? How might we improve our customer satisfaction? Something like that, right? So that's the third phase, defining their point of view. And there are different methods you can use there as well. Then they go into the fourth phase, which is now they ideate. They come up with ideas, come up with solutions. And I think the most commonly used approach here is brainstorming. You know, most people have been exposed to brainstorming formally or informally. But there are a lot of other methods that they can use there as well. So they could, the team could go to alternative spaces and draw insights, right? They could use some tools like creative matrix, right? So some tables where they're coming up with ideas at intersections of different categories. I won't go too deep into all of them, but the point is that there are a lot, part of what I see in terms of value of design thinking is that toolkit of methods to help push teams to innovate in different ways beyond just your normal brainstorm. So they come up with, the team would now come up with a set of ideas, and you want to come up with a lot of ideas at first. So maybe like 200. And some of the ideas are going to be wild and crazy, and some of the ideas are going to be terrible, and that's fine, right? Because you want the team to be in that creative space of generating so much that you're going to get some, you at least have this space for creativity, right? So they'll ideate, then they'll start to structure and select those ideas. And there are ways they might do that. So they might sort of group them into categories. They might use 2x2 matrix. But at the end of the day, they'll have to decide, okay, here's one or two ideas that we're actually going to move forward and prototype and test. So what was the, I think I reframed it as quality of service delivery, right? So let's say they come up with one specific idea around improving their quality of service, maybe changing kind of one of their processes, I don't know, in terms of delivery. So then they're going to go prototype it. And a prototype is really just like a tangible artifact, a representation of an idea. Prototypes can be anything from like cardboard and tape. if you're prototyping like a physical solution, like glasses or a hat, to a storyboard, especially if you're prototyping like maybe a service. People who in the tech space, you know, they'll do a lot of wireframe prototyping using a tool like Figma. You can prototype in virtual spaces, you know, 3D modeling, etc. So there are a lot of ways you can prototype. But the idea, the reason you prototype is, first of all, it helps you refine the idea, because everybody thinks they know exactly what it's going to look like until they start building it. So, yeah. So number one, it helps the team work really through the details. And then number two, you can test that prototype. So in design thinking, you want to kind of have a bias for action to fail quickly if you're going to fail, right? So you want to get out a really fast prototype and put it in front of people and take feedback instead of taking 6 months to build out a final solution before any user or any stakeholder touches it, right? So if this, taking this example of improved quality of service, their idea was a new process, maybe they storyboard that process and now they put it in front, they take some of the people who would actually execute that process and they walk them through the storyboard. They take feedback, right? They learn what's going to work, what won't. Maybe they feel they're on the right track, but they realize some things have to change. They make another prototype. They keep kind of going through that cycle until they've got something that they feel is a pretty robust solution that people have, that has tested well. And then they can go ahead and deploy that. They, conversely, they may realize when they put that new process in front of their teams, they may realize it's just totally terrible and they have to go back and just pick another idea, right? Which is fine, right? So that's basically the design thinking process. The last phase is after ideate, so forth those ideate being prototype and then testing. And then after lots of cycles, eventually they'll deploy some kind of solution.
That's quite comprehensive. And as you mentioned, it can be time consuming, but it is efficient in the long run.
Exactly. Right?
Now, you just made this up off the top of your head because it seems you've been like intentionally using design thinking in many of the things you do, right? How would you say a leader, for instance, or an employer or a team manager can actively like employ design thinking in leading their team or for a manager defining the culture of their team, how can they actively put design thinking into that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I would say a few things. And I think design thinking, that one of the challenges is that sometimes leaders will say, oh, okay, design thinking is great. I read an article. I've seen examples of how we should do it. But then if they're not really deliberate about implementing it, you won't necessarily get the value. So I would say a few things. Number one, you need the skills on the team. And it doesn't really take that much investment. But if, you know, everybody, it's beneficial for teams to get at least some training and exposure. And this is all staff. And it will benefit them in various ways, right, in their work. So I always think, you know, some training in design thinking is potentially very high return on investment as long as it's done well. And that's one of the reasons we at Semicolon train on design thinking. We train the software engineers in our program, but we also do corporate training and training for different organizations that will call us for that purpose. So building the skill is one. I would say the next is the culture. One of the kind of ironies that we tend to see, and this is worldwide and also in Nigeria, is that managers will say, okay, we want to have an innovative company, we want to have an innovative team, but then don't necessarily create a culture that fosters innovation. So if you're going to have a culture for innovation, there are a lot of components, but you need, you know, some people will talk about this concept of psychological safety, right? Which is a big term, but basically means that people are comfortable taking risks in different ways. And sometimes a risk can even be speaking up in a meeting. Sometimes a risk can be, you know, maybe politely questioning something your boss said. Sometimes a risk can be introducing a new idea. Sometimes they can be bigger risks, like really deploying a new project or solution. So managers can do and leaders can do a lot in terms of creating or destroying that culture, right? So for example, if senior managers never ask any of the junior staff for their input or their ideas, if they shoot them down when they offer suggestions, because some of their ideas will not be good, and that's fine, right? But there are different ways you can respond to that. If they kind of publicly criticize or berate people for making small mistakes, you know, various things, those are all going to destroy that psychological safety. So the team, even if they know what design thinking is, and maybe they have great skills and could have applied that in a different cultural context, they won't do it in your company, right? So I'd say the second is really that culture. And then the third would be thinking about processes. So is that a typical way of working for your teams, right? And then even how are objectives, you know, KPIs, et cetera, kind of set, measured, what timelines are put in place, how are they kind of rewarded or enforced, right? So for example, at Semicolon, which is also the case for various other companies and startups, we use objectives and key results, or OKRs, to help organize ourselves around tracking outcomes and how we're going to measure progress toward it. It's a bit more flexible than your KPI, key performance indicator structures. So for example, if there's a team and the manager says, okay, we want to use design thinking, and that's great. You train your people, you try to do a bit of culture work, but you have the same KPIs that you've had every quarter, and your KPIs are pretty much more account opening, right? Or hitting this revenue target or whatever. And they're very aggressive and time bound. Your team isn't going to really even have the space to breathe and take a step back and try to rethink their approach, much less do a bit of failing along the way, because they're just always sprinting toward those same targets. So to summarize, I would say the three things is the skills, it's the culture, and then the process.
Thank you very much, Ashley, for that. So we're moving. On the kind of output or the outcome that comes with putting this kind of process in place. Can we talk about how you measure whether applying design thinking at work actually produce the results you want? Are there metrics that you can use to measure the investment you put into design thinking?
That's actually a good question. And I'm not sure I fully know the answer. And maybe that's something I'll keep thinking about. I think as you get into the space of skills, culture, it becomes much more difficult to directly map your inputs to your outputs. And especially if you're trying to put those in like a bottom line, especially a financial bottom line, it's very, very tricky, right? So I'll think about this a bit more, but my gut reaction is that I think it's probably more art than science in this case. I mean, anything, and I have some background doing research in my prior work at IFINA, driving financial inclusion. We did a lot of research. So I love research. I love measurement, monitoring and evaluation. And there are creative ways that you can measure a lot of things, including culture, including skills, right? So there's certainly metrics you could put in place. But I think when you're transforming people, when you're transforming culture and a team, and what you're trying to, what you're achieving is innovation. This will take time. It'll be a little bit messy. There will be a lot of factors in play. It'll be complex, basically, which makes it a little bit more difficult to really specifically quantify. That being said, I think that there are some measures you could put in place around, as I mentioned, the competencies. You can also put some measurement in place in terms of your culture. And you can just track, you know, how are people coming up with solutions? Are they innovating? One thing that comes to mind for me is that I think in this particular case, the judgment of senior managers and very informed stakeholders would probably also be a really good, as long as you have strong people in those roles, I think that would also be a good way of measuring impact. So managers will be able to tell if their team, they might, if you've not given them the tools, they might not even fully articulate it. The managers will be able to answer questions about, is the team coming up with more impactful solutions? Is the team working more proactively? More holistically, what is the effect, right? Are we seeing, if we set clear objectives for design challenges or just other objectives, our OKRs, our KPIs, are we seeing the team more often being able to meet that? And then also measuring innovation, right? Are team members coming up with new ways of working, which could be big or small, right? So I think that sort of judgment of managers, which can be quantified through surveys if you want, but probably at least through some qualitative measurement would be helpful as well, would probably be the best to give feedback on return on investment.
So now can we talk about any limitations to adopting design thinking in the workplace?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is actually agile methodologies, if you've heard of that. There are a lot of things that managers sort of know, business leaders and managers know can be really effective methods, processes, techniques, and they hear about it and they say, we want to do this in our company. But then it just doesn't get implemented well. So you'll see companies saying we do agile, but do they really do agile? No, they just kind of adopt a few aspects of agile methodology. And then they won't see results the way they could if they were fully implementing agile the way they had intended to. And I think the same is probably true for design thinking, right? So design thinking, if you just really have to invest in that skill set, that culture, right, in addition to the processes. I think that in terms of risk, so if a manager sort of hears this and says, okay, next quarter we're doing design thinking for our, I don't know, across all of our departments, and they give that mandate, but now the team hasn't been empowered to do that through the right skills or culture, then it's likely to kind of fall flat, right? So I think that really being strategic and deliberate in implementing that approach is important to mitigate that risk. And I think everything, I mean, design thinking, it's a set of skills. Even teams that have been trained in design thinking, even like my own, I have to admit, even our own team at Semicolon, sometimes they forget, right? And they kind of default into a different way of working that's a little bit easier or that they were used to before. Even me, you know, I probably forget sometimes, right? So sometimes we just have to pull ourselves back to, and that's fine. It's at least we got the benefit from, like, it's not like a all or nothing, right? If you at least have the skills and you do that some of the time, then so I don't see too much, which is nice, right? So I don't see a lot of risk in at least taking a first step. And for companies, you know, even if their first step is just sort of training their people in design thinking, they'll see some benefit in that. And then over time, they can work on sort of embedding it more fully into their processes, better aligning it to their culture and their way of working. And that's fine as well.
Yeah, this thing you mentioned reminds me of something which is about bringing in new, like if a person now should just hear that, okay, design thinking is one thing that you want to bring, they'd be like, oh, it's another buzzword. What is this again? The same way agile is, and be like,
yeah.
So from what you mentioned, that people are now getting their team trained to use design, to apply design thinking in everything they are doing, not just providing solutions or designing products, but also how they relate, how they address problems in the workplace.
Exactly.
And one thing that stuck with me is everything is human, should be human centric. Everything, either the employees or the customers or management, because they are humans.
Exactly.
So before we leave them out. So yes, that's basically what has stuck with me in this conversation. Thank you very much, Ashley. And you said Semicolon trained teams to for design thinking.
Yes, we do. So we provide, so for companies, we do corporate training on okay. design thinking. Sometimes just training, sometimes we'll help do a workshop that runs alongside actual innovation that the company is trying to work on. So we're coaching at the same time as we're teaching. Sometimes we'll do like free masterclasses or workshops on design thinking that's open to the public. So if people follow our social media at Semicolon Africa, we announce those. Sometimes we also do, one of the things Semicolon does is we train software engineers through a techpreneurship program. So that program is really just producing highly employable software engineers. And part of that program, every software engineer is trained in design thinking, because we think that those skills are so critical in terms of problem solving and innovation. So we do it in multiple different ways. It's something we're very passionate about and really always happy to engage different stakeholders in the ecosystem. So I'm happy to talk to anybody who's interested in exploring that topic or partnering on it.
Yeah, cool, cool, cool. Thank you very much, Ashley, for joining me on this conversation. It's quite awesome, and it's something that will stick with me because many of these things might sound natural, but there has to be a process around it if it's going to be effective. Thank you once again, and have a great day ahead.
Thank you very much. Same to you. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
And that's it on this week's episode of Modern Workplace Conversations. Catch you in the next one. Did you find this episode informative? Do well to drop us a review and also share with your network. Bye.